The following is a duplicate of Tape 2, Side 2 of an interview conducted with Dr. Arthur Chung for the Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project.
I remember the old Chinatown, when I went there, it was not even paved yet. When the streets were not paved, and the shops were very poor, and it didn't look like anything. I mean, it was still part of town. Mm-hmm. There was. I lived in Chinatown. There was there was something like a, not a monastery, but it had these gods or statues and things, so people would burn incense and all that kind of thing. And my uncle used to take me there once in a while just to show you. A lot of gambling around. You hear the spirit of gambling inside. And then once in a while there would be a tug of war, and then everybody would be afraid to go there. And I know that although my father never belonged to any of those organizations, every time there was a tug of war, he was always very apprehensive. Because anybody could have been killed at that time. I used to go to Chinatown fairly frequently for my father to buy pork, and then to buy other things that he would give me on a list and he would ask me to buy this, that, and the other thing. You see, pork in Chinatown was fresh. We just get it from just after it's slaughtered. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's not according to the health standards, because you're supposed to refrigerate meat before you sell it. But in Chinatown, they just get it from the butcher, and then they sell it right away because it's fresh. And the Chinese always love fresh meat. So I used to go down to Chinatown and buy that thing, and also to buy some roast pork and chow su and that sort of thing.
So how often did you go down Chinatown to pick up the food?
Fairly frequently. I mean, maybe sometimes once a week or so. Because especially after my father got really older, he couldn't move around as well as he did before. I did most of the shopping, especially during the high school years. I used to go to the library because it was close to Chinatown, and I would return books and I would take out books. And at the same time, my father said, "Well, since you're going to the library, why don't you go down to Chinatown to pick up something from me?" So I'll go to Chinatown, take a streetcar there, and keep my bag.
Your family are believing any religions, or?
No, none of our, at that time, we didn't go to church, we didn't believe in any religion. My father was not a religious person. In fact, he was rather skeptical of religious people. In fact, he used to say that some of the religious people he knew were worse than those who were not. And he didn't discourage us, but at the same time he didn't encourage us either. Mm-hmm. Now, in these things you will find that my mother, when she was living in Chinatown before she was married, there used to be an American missionary who used to come and speak Chinese and ask them to go to Sunday school. And my mother went to Sunday school when she was young. You'll find that in the tape.
Mm-hmm.
But none of us, really, except for Easter, someone would invite us to go to a church service. And it was mainly for children, going to Sunday school. And then the first person in our family who became really religious was my sister. And the reason was that I think she, when she was in college, she had some friends who were religiously inclined. And then she later married a very devout Baptist, one of the first Baptist families in Canton, I would say. And because this man, my brother-in-law's father, was a very Christian in Canton and organized the Baptist church. In fact, he is even now the director of one of the churches there. And, in fact, he's also the president of the World Baptist Association. So his family was very religious. And so when he married my sister became baptized and was a Christian. So now we have my sister is a Christian, but my other two sisters I want. Since I have remarried after I got back, I am now a Seventh-day Adventist. Because my present wife is a Seventh-day Adventist. She went to Loma Linda for her medical education, which is a Seventh-day Adventist school. And I divorced her right after I got back. And remarried. She was with me in the county hospital as an intern back in 1941. We were the only two Chinese there at that time. And she married later and had three children. Her husband died. And then we got together again. And we decided to get married. We've been married only for 2 years. And so last year I became baptized at the Seventh-day Adventist. I go to church now every Saturday. Saturday is the Sabbath.
Family ever in the worship ancestor, like have a little altar?
We never had an altar in our home. My father was not religious in any way.
You ever attend any weddings, I think, back in 1920s or 30s?
Well, I attended weddings, but the weddings that were held by Chinese friends and friends of my father were all, if I remember correctly, almost all of them were according to the American style of marriage. I remember I was a ring boy in several of these weddings, so I carried the ring when I was a kid. And I don't recall any Chinese type of marriage, a Chinese ceremony of marriage, nor do I recall any funerals held in the Chinese fashion while I was here as a child. So it was quite a, it was rather strange to see a ceremony in China when I went back as a student in 1931, attending a funeral. I had attended a funeral of my other brother's family on that side. They were from Shanghai. So it was very queer to me. Very, very strange to me, the way the ceremony was held.
How about
the
banquets?
Banquets, many. We had, usually when there was a banquet, my mother used to take me along. That was the custom, I guess, at that time. We always take their sons along, not their daughters. And I found it very boring, because I didn't know anybody there, and I just sat there. My mother would talk to someone. And there were banquets in Chinatown for both marriages and then for after funerals, banquets of various types. And for the birth of children. Oh, that custom I remember very well, because when a child is born, then they pass the red eggs and the sour ginger. And then when they come to your house, and a half of a chicken. And when they come to your house, you receive it, and then you put the lacy inside of the bag and take it back to the
That I remember very, very well. That custom was maintained. Then they would also, when the child was a month old, they would have a banquet, and we would always attend the banquet. And my mother usually took me there.
Usually where the banquet is held,
in a large restaurant.
Usually the banquet is big.
Usually very big, yeah. They have quite a number of tables.
Approximately
15. Oh, there were at least 10 or more tables.
And it's very costly, or?
Very costly. Because those things are really costly. And I know that in China, later on, when I went as a student, I heard them talking about how people would get in debt for their lives because they were at one funeral or one marriage.
Your sister got married probably after 1931, or when you were here.
Yes, she married after 1931, because she was married in, yes, it must have been 1933.
So you didn't have any chance to?
No, I didn't. When they were married, they were married with an American ceremony, not with a Chinese ceremony. He was an engineering student. He graduated from the University of Redlands, then he went to Caltech for his doctorate. And they were married in Los Angeles and went back to Canton. But when they went back to Canton, they had a Chinese banquet there. I heard.
Yeah.
Well, he usually treated his patients, but first by a diagnosis, by pulse. And he would feel the pulse and look at the patient's tummy and ask him questions about his health and how it was troubling him and taking a history. And then later he would go into his own. You see, we had the medicine cabinets were all inside the house. And there were these small little drawers divided into four parts. And each of these parts would have medicine in it. And he would pick out the medicine. In fact, my mother learned how to pick the medicine when my father was there. You pick this. And she would know how to weigh it to the small scale. And then they would make up the medicines right there. And the interesting thing was that in order to make it more convenient for the patient, he would ask the patient if they want to wait to take the medicine there, mm-hmm. or if they want to go out for a while and then come back and then take the medicine. And if they want to, we would take that the medicines and boil it in our stove. Mm-hmm. And after the concoction was made, he would put it in a little bowl. He would have a cup of tea and then a little plate of oyster crackers. I still remember that. These little oyster crackers, just like salted wafers. And then it was often my duty as a son or my sister would take this in a tray, mm-hmm. and take it out to the dining room. Mm-hmm. And then the patient would come and drink his herbs and drink his tea and eat some crackers, and then he would go. And that was how he did it at that time. Mm-hmm. Now, in some cases, the patient may say, well, I've taken Chinese herbal medicines before, and I know how to boil medicine, so I'll do it myself. In which case, my father would then fix up the packages of medicine, one package after the other. One package, they know that he could boil it twice, and then he could throw it away, and then the next day he'd use another one. And he would fix these packages and tie them up, and then give it to the patient. And the patient would take it home to have it boiled. And even in some cases where some patients have moved out of the area, they would still send letters to my father saying that I received so much benefit from your herbs that I would like the same medicine that you've been giving me all along to continue. And he would send it to them. There were some people in Salt Lake City and some people in Iowa that he would send medicines to to keep up the treatment so that the treatment wouldn't stop. And quite a number of his patients were very faithful and would always come back and ask about me and about the children, and were very friendly with him. And he was very friendly with them too. So that was how he operated his herb store.
Are there any Mexican, Chicanos, or black patients?
Very, very few. I mean, most of them are Caucasian. There were some Chicanos, some blacks, but very, very few. I recall very, very few.
Did your father hire any help?
No, he never did, except for the very beginning when we had this Mr. Holmes. He was sort of an interpreter. And afterwards, it was just a family affair. My mother helped him in boiling the herbs and other things.
Mm-hmm.
And we helped to take the herbs out to the patients.
Mm-hmm.
And we helped them cleaning up the place.
Mm-hmm.
It was all a family affair. Mm-hmm.
And you lived in the back quarter of the school?
Yeah, we lived in the house. Mm-hmm. In the house.
Mm-hmm.
And that was how we got along.
Do you remember how your father
I believe he charged at that time for one dose of medicine, something like $1.50 for one dose. he didn't charge anything for the diagnosis, but since they take the medicine, he would charge for the medicine. I believe that was the price. I might ask my mother, she might. I think that was about
Does he charge differently among Caucasian patient and Chinese?
About the same. Although he, as with the usual Chinese traditional doctor, if the family is really poor, he won't charge.
Mm-hmm.
He won't charge. Or else he say, well, you can pay me later. And then he couldn't pay me, and he not pay at all. But among Caucasian patients, he always charged.
Did he ever run into the problem like the American doctors were against him?
Yeah, well, there was always the question of doctors or such organizations or quality assurance and so forth, who would question him as, are you really treating these patients as a doctor? Well, he would always say, no, I'm selling herbs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just an herb seller.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, everybody knew that he was an herb doctor. But and he never advertised. But he depended entirely upon his patients recommending other patients. So when a new patient comes in, he would always ask, who recommended you? And if that person said, well, so-and-so recommended me, he remembers the name, then he's remembered.
It's not him.
Yeah. And I think he did run into trouble before, but somehow probably was solved. Because in California, of course, you can't operate as a doctor without a license. I mean, he wasn't a doctor in that sense. But he always said that he was simply a seller of herbs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he got along. And apparently he worked until he died.
Mm-hmm.
He died at the age of 86.
Mm-hmm. Did you say that he always get herbs from some kind of herb wholesaler?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he in Chinatown there were a number of herb stores. They actually buy wholesale and sell retail, and they had connections with. He would get herbs from them. And then later on, during the Japanese War, these stores ordered from Hong Kong. But I remember there was a time when herbs were very short, where there would, many of the herbs would have to compete and have to make innovations. But somehow he was able to get along with what he had. Oh, we used to, we all used to take part in the preparation of herbs. You know that the Chinese herbs, it's very complicated. Some herbs you have to grind. And we had one of those foot grinders, you know, you use it to grind. And he used to do it, and we used to do it too. And then he used to make pills. There were some certain medicines that would be better in pill form. And so we had in the kitchen, make this various solutions then he would make pills. And when he was not doing anything, he would sit down and he would make pills. And I remember that when we would take it out in the sun to dry, and then we had to put it in bottles. Mm-hmm. And then he would dispense with that.
Does he cook the things and make the taste?
Yeah, everything himself. A lot of the things that I remember were made of honey. They used honey to make the olive oil. And I don't know what the ingredients were.
Did your mother remember
that? I don't know whether she remembered or not. But she may remember some of the things. There were some, there were certain medicines that he more or less invented, very effective. I remember there was one medicine that he had, which was for the treatment of eczema in children. It was very effective, and people ask about it all the time. And I remember he uses the yolk of eggs to make it. And it made me think of, in terms of modern medicine, the egg yolk has a high vitamin A content. And vitamin A is often used as an ingredient for dermatology and skin diseases. And I wonder if it had anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I wasn't interested in medicine at that time, Chinese medicine. But of course now, you know, in China, traditional medicine is made. They're trying to have a revival of this Chinese medicine. A lot of people are learning about Chinese medicine. Mm-hmm. And, I think it's right, but there's probably quite a lot in Chinese medicine that's very useful. Mm-hmm. And it's not scientific in the sense that it's not. That you don't undergo the scientific tests that you would give to modern medicine. However, by experience and by the process of elimination, probably those that are not effective would have been.
This is the end of the duplicate of Take 2, Side 2 of the interview with Dr. Arthur Chung.